It's time once again for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy here on Residence 104.4 London. Oh, what excitement. There I was on the 10 o'clock live show, Channel 4, with David Mitchell. And boy, we upped our game there.
Yes, you did. Max Kaiser was on the 10 o'clock live show on Thursday. And it was pretty interesting. What did you think of the audience response? They seemed a little bit, they were whooping it up when you said we should start hanging bankers, but then they got a little bit scared.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of interesting dynamics there. First of all, a big shout out to UK Uncut. You know, they've been, we've been talking about them on the show, and we've been talking about some of the things they can do and giving them support. And I'll tell you, backstage before the show, one of the producers was talking about they want to get someone from UK Uncut on this 10 o'clock live show. But, of course, they're frightened because of what UK Uncut represents. But the producers, of course, are chomping at the bit because they know that on a live TV show like this, you know, there's room for real excitement. And so to get back to my segment, you know, and I, it's a live audience and it's live TV. So as I told people before the show, my goal was to try to start a riot. So when it came to me and I turned to the audience and I suggested that we should hang the bankers, then there was, you know, some applause out there. But, you know, let me give you the insight into how these shows are produced. I mean, the you know, talk about UK Uncut, you know, and you get the phrase tea kettling, it comes to mind. And the audience on a live show is kind of tea kettled, and you know, they're very controlled. They're in a controlled space. They are being handled by somebody who's keeping them kind of laughing. You know, a warm up guy or a comedian. They're being directed when to laugh, when to applause, you know, to one of the dynamics of television. That's just the way it goes. So they come into it. They're not really free to, it's not like a live studio. It's not like a live audience at a show, in like a comedy show, for example, where the audience has a lot more latitude to heckle or to do something. You know, here they don't. But having said that, and there was a lot of energy in the audience around this idea of let's hang the bankers. And people were applauding. And this was picked up by Carl Denninger's site, who's one of the top financial blogs in the world. And he was talking about it as a, you know, send a message to Congress type of thing. And so he felt that. But what is also interesting is that after the show, there was a definite generational divide because people who were, let's say, over 40 years old, over 45 years old, were coming to me after the show and saying, I was out there in the audience trying to get them to riot. And then the people who were in their 20s and early 30s, of course, were not, you know, not able to rise above the fact that they are, you know, being, they're the primary victims of this banking scandal. So they're very conservative. So the 20-year-olds and early something-year-olds are arch conservatives in this mix, even though they're the ones are the biggest victims by this banking larceny. The 45 and olders, and particularly those who work in the finance industry who know exactly what's going on, they're the most supportive of the fact that every couple hundred years you need a cleansing.
Yeah. Well, we received many emails actually from well-known finance experts and saying the same thing, saying, yeah, you were so right. And hanging wasn't good enough for them. And even that Goldman Sachs guy, he backstage, he was really, really quite nice to you and like cornered you and wanted to talk about your ideas. The apprentice guy was kind of just... I can't tell if he really believed what he was saying or if he was just playing devil's advocate.
Well, you know, now I know how Peter Schiff feels when he goes on American mainstream TV. And even though Peter Schiff's been right year after year after year in calling tops in the market, calling bottoms in precious metals, predicting Fannie and Freddie Mac collapse, really just going schooling the folks on CNBC and Fox News and other outlets and CNN, and they pull out the same kind of non fact based silly insults like Peter Schiff, you're bonkers, bonkers that you've predicted every turn in the market for the past 5 to 7 years, bonkers that you've made your clients a ton of money, bonkers that you've been absolutely right about precious metals. This is what's used when critics run out of facts. They pull out they reach down into the bottom of their bag and they've run out of ammunition, and all they've got left there is a bunch of old scrap paper and a couple of pebbles.
Yeah, but most people in the audience will also think that about watching CNBC. They'll think that about Peter Schiff, and to contrast it with how people think about Warren Buffett, because he speaks gently and politely and says all the things people want to hear. They want to believe that. And yet he's quite evidently, and you've called this, vocally for a very long time, Warren Buffett was quite obviously just as corrupt in insider trading and manipulating markets and doing all sorts of shenanigans. And yet people don't want to believe that. To say that on air is to be called bonkers, and by the very audience as well, who have also bought into the propaganda about certain things.
Yeah, and let's look at the market in all of this, because this is the truth about markets. It's our longest running show. It's in the UK. We've been doing it every week for years now. We suggested gold and silver 5-6 years ago when gold was at 200 pounds an ounce and silver was probably 2 pounds an ounce or something. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about this for years. And the contrarian view out there is that paper markets and the current system are manageable, that the coalition government is sound, that the Bank of England is reasonable, and that there will be tweaks that will be made to save the UK economy from further collapse. That's the consensus view pushed by the mainstream media, and certainly Channel 4 is a mainstream media outlet. Now, let's see what happens. Max Keiser goes on 10 o'clock live, says, let's hang the bankers. I detail the flaws in the FSA, the Financial Services Authority. They missed Madoff. They missed AIG. They're corrupt. They're captured. The flaws in the America's SEC. I say, oh, well, they missed Goldman Sachs. They missed the fact that Goldman was selling faulty securities to their own clients and benefiting by that, and took now finally Congress to recall Lloyd Blankfein before Congress on charges of perjury to re-examine that fraud that was committed by Goldman. The SEC, the regulator, missed it. Serious fraud office in the UK. Well, you had Judge Patel in the UK authorize an investigation into the slush fund between BAE and Saudi Prince Bandar. Tony Blair called it off before leaving number 10 and joining JP Morgan to do blood for oil deals around the world. So all these regulatory authorities are completely captured. They're completely in the pockets of the bankers. And as I pointed out on this show, 10 o'clock live, it goes out to 600,000 viewers or more live on the show. The market's reaction within the next 12 hours, new 31-year high for silver. New 31-year high for silver at $43 an ounce, on its way to much, much higher levels. So the bottom line is, without the mainstream media taking a contrary position to me, there would be no room for silver to go higher. I am market-centric. I look where the crowd is not looking, and I examine whether or not the crowd is missing something. A few years ago, the crowd was looking away from silver. They didn't understand silver. They missed silver. The crowd, as evidenced by this, still has no idea what's going on in silver, has no idea what's happening in the paper or fiat currency markets, and this validated this, and the market came through like a champ. This is why I've always been saying for years now, you need to embrace the market, because the market is not just a tool of the kleptocracy. It's basically an inert, shapeless, formless item, a tool like a hammer. A hammer can be used to build a prison. It can be used to build a house. The market can be used in any way. UK Uncut, MaxKeiser.com, any activist group in the world can use the market to dismantle the enemies of free enterprise, free democracy, free and open markets, free copyrights, and everything else that's worthwhile. And this proves it once again. So we're taking the show, Decapitate Bankers. We did a great show in Dublin. Stacey, what were your thoughts on the Dublin show?
Well, that was quite exciting. We showed up there kind of last minute. We only gave like 48 hours notice. And we arranged the show to happen at the Grand Social, which is owned by a friend of Gussie's who writes on our site, maxkaiser.com. And when we were coordinating with the owner, John, we were negotiating for the downstairs area because I said, maybe like 30 to 50 people will come. And then Vincent Brown put the number at between 300 and 400. I put it at around 300. But that many people showed up, and it was very interesting to then go to 10 o'clock live the following night to see the difference between the audiences. And I think one of the things you see in the difference was that Irish people are by nature revolutionaries, and they've overthrown empire occupiers, whereas the Brits have never ever done that in their history. They often whoop at the beginning, all ready to charge on Smithfield or, charge Henry VIII and like lead a peasants revolt. But as soon as they are confronted, all the oligarch, the monarch, the empire, the dictator has to do is show up, and they bow down immediately. That's their instinct, is to like bow in awe and of this person and their wealth. So you saw that in the difference of their audience response, but you did amazing. That was the first time I ever saw you do stand up, and it was really good, Max.
Well, I had to draw on the experiences from 30 years ago when I was doing theater. Actually, my study at New York University when I was in college from 78 to 82 was theater and playwriting and stand-up comedy as well, which I used to do. That's how I know Alec Baldwin, who's now in the show 30 Rock. Alec Baldwin, myself, and a few others were part of a college comedy troupe. So this is kind of like one of the things I grew up doing, but I hadn't had any opportunity to draw on those skills for 30 years. So, but now, thinking about this Amsterdam gig coming up, I want to open this up to musicians as well. So if you're a musician or a group or a band in Amsterdam that wants to be a part of this show, send me an email with a link to like a YouTube or something so I can get a sense of what you're doing. And then from there, we can try to have it arranged so you come and be a part of this show. And because, of course, Resonance FM 104.4 is a musicians' cooperative, best radio station in the world, voted by the IMF recently as such. And the World Bank also put it on its list as a protected heritage radio site. Just send us a link to some of your work, and we'll put that in with the show. Also, big hit in the show were the financial terrorist playing cards. So I'm in touch with that guy. We're going to be making those available again. They were a lot of fun. Also at the show, we had a drawing for some silver Kaisers. Silver Kaiser spot price for an ounce of silver is $40. They're trading on eBay for $200. We had a drawing for a few of those. Everyone was much appreciated. I'll tell you one thing that was interesting. Before the show, Stacey, I asked the audience how many people here own silver or have silver with them or own silver. I was surprised. It only looked like maybe 15 or 20% of the crowd actually had silver. I thought it would be a lot more than that. That's very encouraging for us who own a lot of silver. It shows that there's tremendous buying pressure yet to develop. And one of the things about markets, Stacey, little understood, is the fact that buying interest increases with price. This is something that's really interesting about markets. Usually people have this idea, or the buying interest is driven a lot of times by discounting. So, you might not buy that refrigerator for 500 euros, but you're really interested in 450 euros. This doesn't work with markets. With markets, you know, you might not be interested in buying silver at $40 an ounce, but you'll be darned if you don't buy some at $80, $90, $100 an ounce. And it all has to do with the psychology that goes into markets and economics as a whole. Most people, they buy things and they invest not to make money, but to do better than their neighbor. This is one of the underlying principles of behavioral economics. And you also, this comes out in the studies that show that most people, after they have a certain net worth, they have no idea how much money they have. And also, it all comes out in another study that shows that people who have more than 20,000 pounds in the bank in cash, their level of happiness between that and having, let's say, 20 million pounds of cash in the bank doesn't change much. So after you get a certain, let's say, 1 or 2 years worth of cash flow, you know, burn in the bank, you achieve about the happiness level, the maximum happiness level you will achieve by having cash. From 20,000 pounds and up, it doesn't really change much. And that's been my experience as well, meeting people on the street and meeting people in business. Most people I meet who have wealth are not really that happy. They're complaining all the time. There's a lot of responsibility that goes with it. It's a hassle managing it. You've always got to keep up with, you know, and you lose it a lot of times, and then that's a bummer. So, you know, this is the thing about wealth in general. But as the price goes higher, people become concerned that their neighbors are making money and they're not. And this is what drives the purchase. So higher prices bring in more buyers. Now, the highest all-time price for silver was $50 an ounce during the Hunt Brothers cornering of the 80s, 1980s. And we're rapidly approaching that level. Once we get past 50, you have very little what we would call overhead resistance, very little supply, very little resistance on the upside. So once you break through 50, I think then you're going to start to, silver will enter its phase two of its bull market. It's still in phase one. Gold, however, once it got over 500, 600 an ounce, it entered phase two of its bull market. Certainly when it went over $1,000 an ounce, you could say without that it entered phase two of its bull market, and gold is now in phase two, and it won't, and this phase two will take it probably up above $5,000 an ounce, and then it'll get into its phase three, and then, you know, you never know where it's going to top out on an intraday basis, $10,000, $11,000 an ounce. It's hard to say. Silver, it's still in phase one, still in accumulation by insiders. The public is not participating at all, really, in any size. Once it breaks through 50, then you're going to see a huge swell of interest. That should take it up to 100 very quickly, and then it'll be officially in a phase two. Then you'll start to see a lot of action on the currency wars, precious metals accumulation, and the whole global economy in the post-World War II configuration of the currency grid. It really come under question. They're talking about Bretton Woods II, the Davos. They're talking about floating $100 trillion in new credit. We're talking about a complete new world order, not to beat that phrase to death. A new world economic order is baked into the cake for sure, Stacey.
Well, you know, in terms of participating in the silver market, there's another new trend emerging, and that's the Indian purchasing of silver, because historically they've been big gold buyers, and apparently, they're now turning to silver, following on the Chinese, who started buying last year at the behest of their governments. They've been buying gold and silver.
That's right. That's right. There's the Indians are buying silver. Plus, there's a huge trend now of people getting out of the exchange-traded fund of silver, SLV, and buying physical. This was even covered on CNBC. You know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, people were looking at the drawdown in silver tonnage owned by SLV, the exchange-traded fund, and saying, aha, silver interest has peaked. And at the time, we reported, no, that's not it at all. People distrust paper silver of all kinds, and they're blowing out of their SLV position and buying physical. Turns out that's exactly what's been going on. The silver available at various coin shows around the U.S. is being sold out in the first hour. As people transition from SLV, and SLV has something like 400,000 tons of silver. So this is a lot of buying interest coming in from that direction. You mentioned India. India is now a big buyer of silver. China's been a buyer of silver. Of course, Mexico is thinking about introducing silver into its as a currency, alternative currency, trading alongside the peso. A lot of states in America are considering gold and silver. Countries are now adopting gold and silver. James Grant, one of the smartest guys in the world, follows interest rates. He writes the Interest Rate Observer. He created the yield curve column in Barron's magazine, which is a very popular trend-setting column at the time. He's got this newsletter that's read, very, very exclusive, that is must read by the top 1% wealth management types. He, you know, been beating the drum on the fact that ultimately, as this currency crisis continues, the only solution will be a return to the gold standard. Now, there's so much fiat currency out there, the only way that makes sense is if you mark up the price of gold into the $6,000-$7,000 an ounce per level.
Yeah, but even as I think it's that number is moving up because the debt continues to increase. And, you know, speaking of that, let's move on to one of the biggest debt pushers, a fraudulent debt pushers, has been Goldman Sachs. And now Senator Carl Levin, this week came out with his report that has been in, they've been investigating for 2 years. It's a bipartisan report. And they found, of course, that he believes Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein lied to Congress, which is considered perjury, and that in fact, because the facts, he said, proves he did, because Goldman Sachs knowingly bet against their clients and sold fraudulent products.
Yeah, and the response from Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and all these banks that have been knowingly committing fraud and committing perjury in front of Congress, as this trials continue, they will lobby aggressively to deregulate, to change the laws, change the rules, which means printing up more fiat money. So again, the solution is gold and silver. When you say, okay, Lloyd Blankfein has to go in front of Congress again and explain why he perjured himself. Okay. Well, that might say, ooh, this is going to bring in some sweeping reform and they're going to apply the rule of law and Goldman Sachs is going to have to dismantle their corrupt system. That's not going to happen. Goldman Sachs is going to have to spend another $20 billion or so on lobbying, buy a few more congressmen. They'll buy the Department of Justice if they have to. They'll buy the Supreme Court if they need to. They have unlimited credit. They can print money, $1 billion, at any given time because it's totally uncollateralized. They just loan it into existence. There's no basis for it. It's all electronic. However, the gold and silver vigilantes look at this and they say, well, I'll buy more gold and silver. And this is, again, I think that's a direct response. I think this Lloyd Blankfein perjury problem for Goldman Sachs is one of the chief reasons why silver busted out to a new high this past week, is because people who know this industry know that, well, I guess Goldman's going to have to print up another few billion to buy some more congressmen. That's inflationary. Let's buy more silver.
I wonder about that. You know, had the U.S. already thrown 1,800 bankers in prison as they did during the SNL crisis, had we already seen Lloyd Blankfein, Jamie Dimon, Hank Paulson do the perp walk and spend some time behind bars, do you think gold and silver would now be as high as they are? I mean, obviously the dollar is still doomed for death, but and therefore gold and silver are rising against all currencies because all currencies are crashing during this time. But do you think it would have been a slower rise because people would have thought, you know, there might not be so much corruption and there might be some trust restored to this system that we have?
Yeah, remember John Goodfriend was subjected to the perp walk over there at Salomon Brothers when Salomon Brothers was caught rigging government bonds. And this was still during the 80s and the 90s when gold, you know, was still being sold by central bankers and people were buying stocks. So now that there are no perp walks, there are no prosecutions, there is nobody in jail. And remember last week, I don't know if you saw this, but Elliot Spitzer on television said to his audience on television and to Goldman Sachs that they are guilty, and I invite you to sue me if you think otherwise. Here's the chief attorney general from New York State, former governor, you know, who's calling on these things, knowing full well that there is no rule of law, and therefore there is the paper. And this is what's driving the stock market as well. You know, the stock market, the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, is still in a two-year upish bullish trend, which at the same time, as you look at the statistics, the volume of trading is dropping like a stone. Now, bull markets, by definition, feed on increasing volume. And think of it like a pyramid. You know, the wider the base, the higher up the pyramid you can go. You can't build a pyramid that's inverted, that has a huge base at the top, that's sitting on a pinpoint at the bottom. That's not a sound structure. And yet this is exactly what the Dow Jones and S&P and also the FTSE, this is exactly what they're up to. They're extremely top heavy with all this electronic trading, high frequency trading, algorithmic trading, computers and robots buying with each other to artificially keep prices high, while the big money is moving for the exits, the insiders to buy to sell ratio is enormously favored towards selling. The insiders are selling something like 20 to 30 times more stock than they're buying, which is, again, historic ratio imbalances. They're outside now putting their money into oil, putting their money into commodities, putting their money into gold and silver, and they're leaving the paper bugs to basically walk the plank. And at some point, the trap door opens, and we have another enormous crash, and everyone in the UK who's buying into the government line that things are quote unquote okay, just a little austerity is needed, are going to suffer a catastrophic loss again. We've been calling every single one of these turns on this show for years, and it's baked into the cake. I like this phrase.
Well, to use that to talk further about that, bull market has usually increasing liquidity, increasing amounts of buyers, a large buy volume. Well, we just spoke to the CEO of Endeavor, who mentioned that just a few months ago, they used to have turnover of 100,000 shares per day, and that's now over 1 million. It's increased tenfold in the last few months.
Well, they moved onto the New York Stock Exchange. So they have a listing on Toronto. They have a listing in New York. They have a listing in Germany. And New York is a very high volume exchange. So they listed, and they're trading 3 or 4 million shares a day, as you point out, which is a big increase in their listing and their volume. That's normal. You see that all the time, especially in the mining sector, which they typically start off on these smaller exchanges in Canada, Vancouver, et cetera, where they trade penny stocks. And he said, interestingly enough, you know, Endeavor Silver started off as a 10 cent, you know, as a penny stock with a market capitalization of $300,000. And yeah. Okay, now it's worth over $1 billion. And that's in less than, you know, 7 years. And the business plan for the company is really interesting. It's run by this guy. I interviewed him on The Edge. And, you know, he is a geologist, and they had this idea of going down to Mexico and looking for some mines to develop. And they stumbled upon, in the ancient corridor of silver mining, mines that had been more or less abandoned or were ready to be sold for dirt cheap from people who had basically given up extracting whatever silver they thought they could extract. But the technology hadn't developed in 50 years. They had been basically just forgotten about. So he was able to come in there, and for $300,000, and I guess a very minimal kind of credit line, they started to acquire these old mining properties that already had workers, they had mine shafts, they had processors, and they started cranking out hundreds of thousands and now millions of ounces of silver and gold. So it's a brilliant business plan. It's cash flow, you know, positive. They're generating their own enough cash to expand internally. There's no debt. And the management, this guy, Bradford Cook, who was at this presentation here in Paris, he gave the whole history of the company. And just recently, they moved over to the New York Stock Exchange, and the volume has increased. Now, going forward, the entire mining sector, this is an interesting statistic, Stacey, all the precious metal miners that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange, all of those companies, if you added up all the capitalizations of all the companies, the Newmont Minings, the Goldcorp, Endeavor Silver, you added them all up, and they would still be have a valuation less than Walmart, just one company on the New York Stock Exchange. So that should give you an idea of how under-owned this sector is. When this bull market hits its top, that's going to be a completely different situation. The number one component of the Dow Jones in terms of market cap and valuation will be the mining stocks. So right now, they're worth probably less than 1% of the valuation of the stock exchange. They will end up being 20 or 30% of the valuation of the stock exchange. So all of these gold and silver mining companies are going to be 20 times up in valuation. Now, of course, the caveat is that in the sector, mining sector, and in the stock market, of course, there's risks there in terms of management and political risk, and there's a lot of other risks, and it's not like owning the bullion itself outright, which is basically a currency, and there's no risk in owning it, because just like there's no risk of owning the pounds in your pocket, it's money by some measure, although I don't think it has any value. Gold and silver similarly is money, and it's not risk because it's money, and you know,
it's money that It's a lot less risky than owning a dollars or pounds, because no fiat currency in history has survived, whereas obviously gold and silver have. So if you're holding savings, if you're trying to build the savings over 20, 30, 40 years, you know, to build for your pension, that is something to consider, that saving in pounds is historically much more risky than holding a more sound currency.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of this transition that we're experiencing now. The global community is beginning to embrace the fact that gold and silver are money. It's a currency, and they're moving away from the idea that this is a commodity. And certainly with silver, because silver is actually has many industrial uses, and it was penalized for a long time as being just another commodity like lead, zinc, copper, and silver. And so it's kind of traded and was sensitive to the economy and the business cycle. But now, as people understand that it's divorced from the business cycle, it's divorced from the economy, it is money, and therefore it is going to rise as a function of the collapse of the fiat money empires around the world and cartels, that's another huge transition point that brings in a huge transitionary influx of capital that moves into this, again, teeny, teeny market. Remember, the entire silver market, the above-ground stock of silver is only $30 billion. Oh, now it's higher, of course. Now it's only $40 billion are available in silver. I mean, to put that into perspective, that's still less than what Goldman Sachs think the valuation of Facebook is. They think Facebook's worth $50 billion, a company that with no barriers to entry, that is was been in existence for less than 5 years. No one's seen their financials. Has been offered to insiders by in a corrupt, illegal way, according to the SEC, Goldman Sachs, who there's no visibility in terms of even if the company is going to be around in 5 years. This is worth $50 billion. What's all the silver in the world, that's the billion ounces that exist in the world today, what's the total valuation of that? It's less, $40 billion.
Well, that's what Wall Street bonuses were last year, was $40
billion. Right, and that's just picking 1% or 2% in fees from the $700 trillion in derivatives that were traded. So as the fiat money and the derivatives and the $4 trillion per day Forex market continues to collapse, if only 1 or 2 or 3% of that collapsing building of fiat demolition finds its way into silver, that means that instead of being a $30 or $40 billion market, it becomes a $100 billion market. And of course, that means you're talking about $80 to $120 to $150 per ounce silver, which is, I think, without a shadow of a doubt now within striking range as we get into phase two of the bull market for silver.
But speaking of currencies, you were also talking about, you know, the risk of owning any share in any company is management risk, that you could have an incompetent manager or you could have a corrupt manager. And you also have that risk of dilution where they print up new shares willy-nilly and start giving them to insiders and friends. But that's the same thing that appears to be going on in the global currency markets, the global central banking market. You have a lot of printing up of new units of currency to hand to insiders for free. And we seem to be in that spiral, and that's part of the reason why gold and silver are acting as currencies and soaring in price, because people are starting to doubt the management of the fiat currency system. They look around them and they see either incompetent or corrupt managers, you know, CEOs of these currencies, and they're seeing major dilution going on.
Yeah, well, you know, for decades, you know, people with money, with wealth management, and let's say cash managers on the balance sheets of huge corporations with hundreds of billions or even trillions of cash to manage, you could get 5, 6, 7% on your cash, you know, in a government-backed money market. You know, you could get 5% on 2-year treasury notes in a AAA rated country, and 5% on a $100 billion is a nice, you know, return, riskless. And then you could enhance that return by going into the derivatives market or the options market and putting on various spreads, et cetera. But since 9/11 in particular, when interest rates were dropped down to under 1%, we haven't seen, you know, the trend for interest rates is down. You know, in Japan, it's been under 0.5% for a decade, a couple of decades. In the U.S. and around the world, interest rates are, you know, at that 0% level. And so the argument that, you know, we're going to end up going back to an environment of 5%, 6% returns on cash, it's just not materializing for a number of different reasons. Look at the U.S., for example. The reason why Bernanke flooded the economy with trillions in fresh fiat credit is to stimulate the real estate market that had crashed starting in 2007. Well, what's this current state of real estate? What's the current state after quantitative easing round one, quantitative easing round two? How's the real estate market doing? The target that Bernanke was looking to stimulate and to reflate. Well, according to Business Insider, there are 10 real estate markets in America right now that are at the lowest ebb of their entire move down and are on the edge of falling into a complete, utter abyss. Heading the list is the Miami-Dade County area. Prices down there, 30, 40% off the top, 50% off the top. They're talking about prices dropping a 50% from here, 60% from here. Vegas, parts of California, Illinois. So the real estate market in the U.S. is at the lowest point of the entire down cycle and about to really crash in seriously at the moment. So that was a total failure by Bernanke. This is a total black hole, a vortex imploding of debt. And so this money printing operation has got to continue. Interest rates are not going to go up anytime soon for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years. It's impossible. So therefore, these people who have tons and tons of cash to manage, the idea that they're going to get any return on their cash from returns on any of these sovereign bonds is dead in the water. It's not going to happen, except for a few countries, which are resource-rich countries, countries with mining and oil. So that brings you to, of course, Australia, New Zealand, Canada. These countries are currencies are trading up against the dollar. They're in Brazil. They've got interest rates that are backed by, you know, they've got some higher interest rates. But then you've got the currency risk, of course, which is the word risk is something you're trying to avoid. When you had the world reserve currency and it was paying 5%, you could get 5% without any risk. And this was the situation for decades. Now it's completely gone. The world reserve status is done. But having said that, let's look at Australia and Canada for a second. And let's look at Australia. You know, Australia has been the darling of the currency market. It's also been, you know, a real estate boom, which is continuing through 2007, 8, 9, 10, and 11. It had a downtick a couple of years ago. The government came in. They offered a lot of stimulus to keep it floating. And as a result, the market's been strong. But people like Steve Keen in Australia have been predicting a real estate collapse in Australia. They have been on hold, waiting to see if a collapse materializes, which would be in line with the global deflationary collapse. It looks, Stacey, as if real estate market in Australia is, in fact, now entering a massive downturn. What do you see?
Yeah, well, they were reporting that in Queensland seems to be leading the way, that they're having price declines of up to 40% in some regions. And remember, this is like the Alberta of Canada, Alberta of Australia, and that it's the intense, this is where all the mining and all of the cotton and all a lot of the agriculture, a lot of all these, during this commodities boom, this is the area that has benefited the most. So this could be like Dr. Copper, in that even at this location, which is benefiting so much from the commodity boom, you're starting to see this collapse. But also, it's a tourist-rich area, so a lot of the tourist zones, those cities and areas, that's the housing market sector that's starting to collapse. And it's also where the extreme weather has been hitting. You witnessed all of the massive historic floods in that region in the last few months. So yes, this seems to be the beginning. The vortex is happening in Queensland, and then should spread to the other cities in Australia. But we're going to be speaking to Steve Keen actually very soon. He's coming through Paris, and we're going to talk to him about this and get an update on it.
Right. So people who are parking their cash in Australian dollars, you've got this currency risk because the government now, as the economy deflates and as the real estate market deflates, they will start to bring interest rates down. And this will bring the currency down in value. And this is a same thing goes across, you know, anything priced in Australian dollars. So that appears to now be turning, a long delayed turn in that market. Canada, the thing about Canada is that they still do most of their trade with the U.S. and the U.S. is shrinking. So that's a negative. On the positive, they've got the tar sands, they've got Alberta, they've got energy resources. So people buy, it's a proxy for oil in a lot of ways, and oil is up and oil will continue to go higher. So Canada's got that going for it, you could say, as a commodity-based currency.
Yeah, but I want to say before you move on there is that Canada, I think that could be popped as well, because I don't think people are taking into account what the U.S. own naval assessment, I think it was in 2003, the U.S. military sees possible conflict with Canada coming up as the ice, the Arctic ice sheets melt and the Northwest Passage becomes navigable. You know, right now, America has allowed that to be Canadian territory, but I think they've made it quite clear that once that the Northwest Passage is easily navigable, the U.S. wants to control it, and they are sending out signals that Canada better not think that they have the right to control that region.
Could be. Then we got the U.K. pound. U.K. pound has been relatively strong in the last year or so. Going forward, this coalition government and the imposition of the austerity measures seems like it's heading for a big conflict, and inflation is just eating up this economy alive. Price of gas in the UK has never been higher in the entire country's history. Food prices are escalating. How is the government going to deal with this? They need to print more money, which is going to debase the British pound. You know, what is the has very little manufacturing left. The country is now an energy importer. It used to be an exporter with the North Sea oil. Now, basically, having hit peak oil in the North Sea, they're importing their oil and energy. So they're really become like Japan in that sense. They don't have their own energy enough to supply this economy. Their primary industry is banking and hedge funds.
But that's exactly why I think there's so much support in, say, that audience at 10 o'clock live for bankers, is because, you know, they might be criminals, but that's where a lot of British people receive their livelihoods, they believe. You know, they think it's the bankers and the dictators and the oligarchs having free reign here. Look, every oligarch, every dictator being chased out of the Middle East comes to London. All of their billions are found in banks in London. And that plays a lot on the, you know, the psyche of the population here. They know that's where their, you know, where their butter for their bread comes from. You know, they know who's feeding them. And I think that, you know, they don't realize that they could have a better economy if they let these bankers and dictators not receive safe haven and, you know, from looting their own countries and economies and financial systems.
Well, they don't make the connection between rising energy and food prices and the corruption in the city.
Yeah.
And they're told on their major media outlets only one side of the story, that the third of the country's revenues come from banking. And that the third of the country's tax collection comes from banking. Well, that's true. And 80 to 90% of the reason why food and energy prices are now so high is because of the bankers. If you got rid of the bankers, you would lose tax revenue, but you would gain from the purchasing power you would have to buy food and energy more. The net-net, you'd be better off without the bankers. This is the equation that nobody in mainstream media in the UK is willing to put forth. And even, and so...
And plus, of course, there's the misallocation of capital. More and more of the economy goes to feeding these bankers and feeding their systems. So you don't have entrepreneurs here. You don't have other manufacturing industries here. You have only bankers.
Right. And the proof is in the rising price of gold and silver against the British pound. I mean, okay, if I say, as I just said, that the British pound is relatively strong, okay, it's relatively strong against other fiat currencies. How's it doing against gold and silver? It's crashing. Of course. I mean, let's be clear about that. When I say the British pound is relatively strong, I mean against some other fiat currencies. Not against gold and silver. It is similarly crashing, which is a proxy vote on how this coalition government is doing. How is David Cameron doing? How is Nick Clegg doing? Well, gold and silver are saying they're doing a really bad job because the value of the country's currency is crashing against real money. So that's the main story. Now, nobody on the BBC will come out and say that as such. Which is almost criminal in negligence.
Yeah, but are they doing a bad job, or are they doing the job they're tasked with? Because what that inflation, that collapsing value of the pound against other currencies, namely gold and silver, is a way for them to transfer wealth from the population to the top 1% in a way that doesn't involve direct taxation or obvious forms of theft. They do it surreptitiously.
Right, direct taxation. The poll tax comes to mind. Mm. The poll tax came along and there was massive rioting in the streets because people hated that tax. People don't understand that inflation is a tax. People don't understand that if the government is printing money to bail out the insiders and the bankers, you pay for it at Tesco and at the petrol station in higher prices. They don't get it. That's a tax. You're being taxed. Your taxes are going higher right now in the form of inflation. So the fact that you don't see it is a brilliant propaganda success by the Bank of England, Mervyn King, and this current government. Now, at some point, the risks that is taken by the top in introducing this stealth inflation tax is that the people eventually do see what's going on and they react as they did react in, during the poll tax. And I think also that is just an inevitable situation. You already see rumblings of it. UK Uncut is already sending, you know, a telegraphing what's to come. You know, the UK Uncut folks are seeding the population with the basic core message that something is seriously wrong between the corporations, the banks, and the government and their relationship with each other that's causing incredibly disjointed economic dislocations resulting in folks getting their wealth confiscated from them either through inflation or through complete breakdown in labor negotiations. You know, wages are being destroyed and services are being cut. And this is a continuing apace.
Well, hopefully, not hopefully, one day they will. Everything will change here suddenly. It'll be overnight. And just hopefully you're ready for it. But so any final comments before we go? Do you want to say anything about Jimmy Carr and silver?
Right. That was interesting. After the 10 o'clock live show, I was standing in the green room. I was with Stacy. And like beeline, you know, from across the room, bing, 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 Jimmy Carr. He shows up and he's like buttonholes me. And he's like, what's going on with silver?
Yeah, he really wanted to know about the Silver Liberation Army. He was interested in this whole story.
Yeah, he was just all over the whole silver story. He had been told the story from another producer on the show. And we spent a long time talking about what's happening in the silver market and the fiat currency markets. And, you know, he really, his instincts were that there's a big culture story here.
Yeah.
And, you know, his job as a comedian is you got to stay on top of these trends and to be competitive with the other comedians. And everyone is a news junkie in the comedy business. And it's all based on speed. You know, if you're fast, you know, you rise to the top of the comedy business. So in a lot of ways. So, you know, he's like, what's this thing coming? I want to be on it so I can, you know, ride it. So I think we're in contact now with some mutual contacts. And I think we're going to see something come out of that, Stacey. Was that your thought?
Yeah, I think that just to let you know that the Silver Liberation Army is spreading. We're recruiting members all over the world. And I think that's it, though, for this edition of The Truth About Markets. And one more word from Max Kaiser here.
Bye, y'all!